Godly Habits, 7 Spiritual Practices to Grow You as a Disciple of Jesus. Introduction, Hearts and Habits. The heart, it beats and rests, it flutters and quickens and races. We speak from it when we say what we truly mean and we listen to it. At least we're encouraged to listen to it. It is a complex machine whose valves open and close 100,000 times a day. It can be attacked from within. It can be broken by others, and we give it away sometimes too easily, especially when we're young. What is it about the heart? We tend to think of the heart as the epicenter of human emotions, from where love and courage are generated, and from which greed and envy and malice and slander originate, even though these find their ultimate expression through other organs, like our eyes or mouths or hands. The Bible speaks of the heart as the center of the person in a more complete manner than we normally think. It's the nucleus of personhood, the seat of human will, and the decision-making center. In short, the heart is a bigger deal in Scripture than it is even in culture and medicine. Just listen to some of the Bible's seminal statements about the heart. Genesis 6:5. The Lord saw how great the wickedness of the human race had become on the earth, and that every inclination of the thoughts of the human heart was only evil all the time. The Lord regretted that he had made human beings on the earth, and his heart was deeply troubled. Deuteronomy 6. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, and with all your soul, and with all your strength. These commandments that I give you today are to be on your hearts. Psalm 14. The fool says in his heart, there is no God. They are corrupt, their deeds are vile. There is no one who does good. Proverbs 16. To humans belong the plans of the heart, but from the Lord comes the proper answer of the tongue. All a person's ways seem pure to them, but motives are weighed by the Lord. Ecclesiastes 3. He has made everything beautiful in its time. He has also set eternity in the human heart. Yet no one can fathom what God has done from beginning to end. Jeremiah 17. The heart is deceitful above all things and beyond cure. Who can understand it? Jeremiah 29. You will seek me and find me when you seek me with all your heart. Ezekiel 11. I will give them an undivided heart and put a new spirit in them. I will remove from them their heart of stone and give them a heart of flesh. Matthew 5. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Matthew 6. From where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Matthew 15. But the things that come out of a person's mouth come from the heart, and these defile them. For out of the heart come evil thoughts, murder, adultery, sexual immorality, theft, false testimony, slander. The Scriptures powerfully remind us that our hearts direct our lives. They also remind us that by themselves our heart will not direct us to godly ends. We are to love the Lord our God with all our hearts, and yet God told his prophets of old that he himself needed to write the law on the people's hearts. Indeed, God himself would give them a new heart, a heart of flesh, or a meaty heart, as one St. Matthew's member has said, removing from them a heart of stone. Jesus optimistically blessed the pure in heart, saying that they will see God, but only a chapter later taught that what we treasure in life, for many of us, it's literally our treasure, that reveals what our heart loves. Jeremiah also reminded us that the heart is a deceitful thing, startlingly and perhaps poetically stating that it is beyond cure and understanding. All this is a roundabout way of saying that any discussion of godly habits or spiritual practices or Christian disciplines needs to be grounded in heart renewal. Otherwise, they become another checklist that we try to keep, or more likely, yet another benchmark that we will fail. Without a renovated heart, in which God works on our spirits by His Spirit, godly practices can easily become a form of legalism, in which we try really hard to show our devotion to God via dutiful obedience to an agreed set of practices. Without renewed hearts, godly habits can quickly become joyless and begrudging duties. It's true that godly habits lead to godly lives, and that Christian disciplines are what Christian disciples do, but they need to flow out of, rather than replace, a renewed heart. They are a response to the grace of God shown to us in the gospel. They are a whole of life, body, mind, and spirit, orientation towards the one who lived among us and died for us and rose triumphantly and who now reigns over the details of our lives and continues to intercede on our behalf. Godly habits are gospel habits. But here's the thing. Godly habits flow out of a renewed heart, but godly habits are also agents of renewal themselves. That is, spiritual practices, including the ones we will focus on in this booklet, are one of the most powerful ways in which God's Spirit renovates our spirits. They are tried and tested means or catalysts by which our hearts remain soft to God and His Word and inclined towards loving others. Hearts and habits have a self-strengthening relationship. Renewed hearts give birth to godly habits, and godly habits refresh human hearts. This has been tried and tested and found to be true. Not only have they been tried and tested by generations of Jesus' disciples, but by Jesus himself, for these Christian disciplines were his disciplines long before they were ours. But why habits? One of the things about habits is that all of us have them, and they do their work in our lives, for good or ill, without us noticing most of the time. A habit is a behavior that occurs automatically, over and over, and often unconsciously. As much as 40% of the actions we take on a daily basis are the result of habits, automated, as it were, rather than by deliberate choice. And what this means is that our pattern of habits has a profound influence over our schedules, what we do with our minutes and hours and days. But our minutes and hours and days are not just increments of time. They are our lives. You could say that a life is just the largest or longest increment of time. So it follows, and this is no exaggeration, that our habits form our hearts and shape our lives, and they do this automatically and unconsciously. Now, this begs an important question. Who chooses the habits which govern our days and shape our lives and form our hearts? The truth is that just because you don't remember intentionally choosing habits, it does not mean you don't have them, because they mostly just operate in the background of daily activity. And so if you didn't choose them, who did? Consider your own life. Despite your best intentions, you find yourself routinely rushing and speeding and late. Or you know that your first instinct in the morning is still to check your phone for news or email or social media before you do anything else. Or your default is still to buy something to ease that ongoing restlessness in your soul. Or your customary knee-jerk response to loneliness or anxiety or boredom is to self-medicate by binge-watching TV or YouTube videos, or by going to the fridge, or by searching for porn, or whatever it is for you. If we don't consciously choose our habits, and yet we all still have them, then someone or something else, the noise of our culture, the remnants of our sinful nature, profit-mongering businesses and programmers, or even the devil himself, has chosen them for us. And what are the chances that that person or thing has our flourishing and spiritual progress as their top priority? So we want to be as intentional with forming godly habits as we can, because we know that habits form us as much as we form habits. We want to be thoughtful in developing spiritual practices, because that is the way we can turn our positive efforts, which takes, well, effort, into something that over time takes less effort, but has greater impact in our lives as they operate in the background of daily life. We want to purposefully adopt Christian disciplines because we are Christ's disciples, and we know that his lifestyle leads to life to the full, even though it can feel limiting at times. And we know that as we do this, humbly and prayerfully, that we are not only exercising our capacity to do good and godly things, we're availing ourselves of a good and godly power far beyond our capacity, who can do immeasurably more than we can ask or imagine. Well, enough of the philosophizing. What are the seven godly habits that are the focus of this booklet? They are, in order of appearance, prayer, scripture, Sabbath, friendship, hospitality, generosity, technology. Actually, it's probably more accurate to say that these are seven areas of habit rather than being spiritual practices themselves. In each chapter, we'll provide a number of specific ways in which you can implement the habit into the ground-level reality of your life. It's also worth saying that these are not the only seven areas of habit that Christians can adopt. There are others you can have a crack at, especially if you find that you've incorporated most or all of these seven into the rhythms of your life already. We've included some extra areas in Appendices 1 and 2. And there's nothing particularly special about having seven of them, other than the fact that any more than seven feels like too much to keep in your brain. After all, there are 7 days in a week, 7 habits of highly effective people, 7 seas to sail, 7 deadly sins, and so on. More importantly, we have settled on these 7 areas because we think spiritual practices that center on prayer, scripture, Sabbath, friendship, hospitality, generosity, and technology will have the biggest impact on our Christian lives, in the age in which we live, in the culture in which we are immersed. They're not low-hanging fruit as such, but we consider that by implementing Christian disciplines in these 7 areas, you will go further, faster, as the disciple of Jesus in 21st century Northern Beaches life. Well, a few last things to say before we launch into the practices in detail. Number one, you don't want to think of these practices as primarily individual in nature, though some of them are more individual, like prayer and scripture and technology. Most of them have some kind of communal dimension, and they are all enhanced by practicing them in community, that is, with discussion, accountability, and so on. Number two, habits take time to become habits. Someone once quipped, "You can't microwave godliness. So give them a go, and when you feel like giving up, continue to give them a go. The longer you lean into habits, the less direct effort they take, and the more they work in the background of your life. But progress will likely be lumpy, so persevere." Number three, the conclusion about the rule of life is key to the whole process. So even if you're tempted to skip a chapter or two, don't skip the conclusion. The rule of life is the way to turn great ideas into doable daily and weekly disciplines. Well, onto the habits.